For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
So, coming out of the holidays, should parents expect schools to shut down?
I don't know, Margaret. I'm not sure. When you talk about shutting down schools, there's always the collateral
That's also
effects.
Radioactive.
Yes, exactly. There's always the collateral issue. So you have to balance, and you do it in real time, depending upon the viral load of disease in your region. Whether, you know, the upper northeast may be quite different from the southwest, from the Pacific coast, from the upper northwest. So you have to have the local authorities evaluate on a situation-by-situation basis the potential collateral deleterious effects with the effects of what might happen if you have so many kids getting infected.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show here at 4:09 in the PM, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. I could probably do a pretty good Fauci today.
Could.
I could do a good Fauci. Chris, that's the first time. Okay, every time we hear Dr. Fauci talk, I feel like it's a new Dr. Fauci. Chris, when has he ever talked about letting local authorities make decisions for themselves? That's the first time I've ever heard that from him.
Absolutely never. You know, there's an old psychological technique that you do when you're not exactly sure of yourself, when you're presenting something to people or in a group, and it's called fake it till you make it sound like you know what you're talking about and people will believe it. That's what I feel when I hear Dr. Fauci now. I just feel like he's just talking. He's trying to sound authoritative, like he's the expert. He knows what he's talking about. But I don't believe a damn thing he says anymore. I really don't. And I wish he would go away. But of course he's not, because Republicans are going to take over the House. There's going to be investigations. Our own Attorney General Eric Schmidt, future senator, he put out the testimony of Dr. Fauci. And I think I heard that Dr. Fauci said 174 times that he did not recall.
Mm-hmm. The guy who knows everything.
The guy that knows everything, who's the science. But 174 times he couldn't recall details that he was asked in his deposition.
I think you just accurately summed up the last 3 years of Tony Fauci. Fake it till you make it. Whatever the current situation might be, just say whatever needs to
sound
pop into your head. And sound like you're really smart. All right, let's bring in our next guest. Byron Keelan of Freedom Principle Missouri joins us now. Byron, we were just commiserating about Tony Fauci and the amount of epic damage he's done to our country, and I would bet that's going to be one of the things that the Freedom Principle would like to see our Missouri legislature do to protect ourselves from this, you know, any COVID tyranny in the future. But Byron, I want to talk to you first about electoral integrity, being that we just finally finished up election 2022. Is election integrity something that Missouri still needs to do some work in, despite the bill that passed last year?
Well, thanks, Tim and Chris, for having me on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk about Fauci, you know, and your lead-in, you have that clip of Joe Biden saying, lying dog face, pony shoulder. And that truly is talking about Anthony Fauci. But yes, election integrity is still on our, it is probably our one of our top priorities, along with education. And we are, you know, working strictly to basically get rid of voting machines in the voting process and in the tabulation process, is that we've proven that, you know, with the Arizona and even in Georgia and Pennsylvania and things, is that machines just can't be trusted anymore. And Senator Igel has actually entered a bill, Senate Bill 98, and it calls for the hand counting of all ballots for the elections in Missouri. And so we're really behind that. The other thing that we're really behind is Senator Jill Carter's bill, Senate Joint Resolution 28, that's pushing this ratification by concurrent majority so we can stop, you know, issues or amendments to the Constitution, like Amendment 3, from being passed with just a simple majority.
Byron, Stell, printed out your press release that came out today, and as I looked over it, I think there's a typo or there's something missing here. Under election integrity, you've got banning all electronic voting and tabulation machines, supporting constitutional ratification reform to protect our Missouri Constitution from outside dark money groups. Somehow, only citizen voting amendment is not on here. Where is that a typo? Where is that?
No, actually, it is one of our priorities, Chris, and actually, we pushed that in the last legislative session. It's actually part of the Senate Joint Resolution Bill 28 that would only allow U.S. citizens to vote. So I thank you for bringing that, you know, to our attention. But yes, we are pushing that. And then we're also going to be trying to push getting a bill that would ban ranked choice voting. And that in last legislative session, that had a clause in there about only U.S. citizens could vote in elections. So it's very much a priority on our priority list.
Byron, would you explain the proposal of the concurrent ratification process? So we're talking about these ballot initiatives, right? These ballot initiatives that get put on the ballot to vote for pink fluffy unicorns or Medicaid expansion or marijuana. And right now, I know it's fairly easy to access the ballot if you've got enough money and horsepower behind you. But it's also really, really, really easy to pass these if they sound pleasant enough to the ear and the eye. 50% plus one, and then you're in the Missouri Constitution. Should it be that easy? Should it be a little harder, Byron? What say you?
Well, we think it should be really hard to change the Constitution. I mean, you can't change the U.S. Constitution just with a simple majority of votes. Otherwise, we'd have probably 40 or 50 of these amendments if that were the case. But the Missouri, when you look at Missouri, you know, for Amendment 3, is that almost 80% of the counties in Missouri voted against Amendment 3. And you had St. Louis City, St. Louis County, Jackson, Clay, Platte County, all those high-density counties, Greene County, which is Springfield, Boone County, which is Columbia. So you had a lot of the university areas and those that voted for this. And that actually outweighed the vote of the entire state. And so what concurrent majority ratification means is that it doesn't change the process for getting amendment on the ballot, but what it does, it changes the process or the requirements for getting an amendment to be passed. It would still allow the vote of a simple majority, but it would also require the majority of legislative state representative districts. So you have 163 state representative districts, so you'd have to get a simple majority of those districts. And so we think that that is the fairest method of all, because in a sense, is St. Louis City, St. Louis County, Jackson, in a sense, is almost like Chicago with regards to Illinois, that regardless of what the downstate does, is that those areas, which are, you know, maybe the major population areas, are thwarting the will of the people.
Byron, the pandemic revealed what was going on in our public schools, and of course our parents went to the school board meetings, got involved. Many of them ran for school board. Many of them won. One of the things that you have a legislative priority for next year is establishing a parental bill of rights. What exactly does that entail?
Well, it just basically says that the parent is in charge of their child's education, in a sense. So right now the teachers are, you know, hiding conversations regarding their gender identities or regarding their this race-based education aspect of things, and they're telling these students to hide this from their parents, and this is outrageous. I mean, I can't imagine telling a student, hey, look, don't tell your parents about this conversation. It sounds kind of, in a sense, pedophile-ish, in a sense. It's, hey, you know, this, just keep this between you and me. And as we see, a lot of these, you know, transgender issues are grooming kids for this type of stuff. And so we want the parents to reclaim the role of what's in their curriculum, of how their school is administered, and how their children are taught, and that is, you know, not with this tenets of race-based education or critical race theory. It's more traditional education of reading, writing.
So specifically, does that mean parents get to view the curriculum? I mean, specifically, what would be in the Bill of Rights?
Yeah, it would be opening up the books, in a sense, is letting them see all the contracts, letting them see the curriculum that is being taught in the classroom, letting them, you know, be able to speak at board meetings without being censored or without being threatened by, you know, potential thrown in jail with the FBI, you know, those types of things. But, and so actually, I can't remember the state representative. Oh, actually, it's Caleb Rodin, who's actually pushing a joint resolution that would make the Parents' Bill of Rights actually a constitutional amendment. Mm. And so we're actually, I was surprised by that, but good to see it.
Speaking to Byron Keelan of the Freedom Principle of Missouri. Byron, one of the biggest sections you have on the Freedom Principles legislative priorities, which folks can find at freedomprinciplemo.org. freedomprinciplemo.org is crime and public safety. Byron, I know that you're situated here in the St. Louis region, although you do like to work on issues statewide. But Byron, we often talk about how the St. Louis region goes, so goes the state. And one of the biggest issues we talk about, one of the biggest problems we have, is crime. Byron, what would you like to see the legislature tackle in that regard?
Well, the big one is to return police control back, take it out of the city's hands and put it back into the state's hands. And we're glad to see Senator Igel and Senator Shore have introduced bills on the Senate side. And then we're really excited. The fact is that we have four reps, including newly elected Rep Justin Sparks, have all filed bills to return control of the police to back to the state. And this is a really key thing, is that you know, we pushed for this in the last legislative session. Unfortunately, Speaker Vescovo, former Speaker Vescovo, didn't push it to the committee until late March, which basically killed the bill. But we are pleased to see that Speaker Plocker, incoming Speaker Plocker, is supportive of this and might, you know, be more amenable to getting assigned to committee as soon as the legislative session starts and getting it passed in the House and in the Senate. The other thing that we're working on is actually expanding Article 7, Section 1 of impeachment of elected officials to include county prosecutors and municipal elected officials. We've seen the efforts with Philadelphia, or with Pennsylvania, trying to impeach their Philadelphia prosecutor for his lack of duty or diligence, or, you know, lack of duty in prosecuting criminals. Mm-hmm. We've seen that from Kim Gardner, obviously, and unfortunately, Governor Parsons has refused to do anything about removing her from prosecuting cases. So we want to try to expand this so that the state legislature can actually take up and remove her.
Byron, one last quick question. Will my wife and I be seeing you at the St. Louis City Republican Christmas party tonight?
Yes, actually, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Seeing you and Becky. So,
excellent.
You know, it's going to be a good time.
Excellent indeed. Deck the halls as we prepare for the holidays. And then Byron and the gang at the Freedom Principle will be working hard into the legislative session. Byron, thanks so much for joining us and for the global kind of roundup as to all the things that you and all the gang at the Freedom Principle will be working on in 2023.
Well, good. And I just want to let you know, we are going to be having a meeting on January 19th. It's a Thursday night at the St. Louis County Library, Grant View, at 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And we're going to be talking about the legislative priorities and going through the bills that are already in process and kind of looking at how they match up and which bills we're going to be supporting. So we encourage people to go to our website at freedomprinciplemo.org and look at the event area on the website and come out and let's, you know, talk strategy on getting these bills passed.
Absolutely. freedomprinciplemo.org. Byron, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. How about we shift gears and talk to our morning guy next? We'll have a morning in the afternoon here on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show when we talk to Mike Ferguson of the Mike Ferguson in the Morning Show about all of the issues of the day, including St. Louis regional politics and public policy. And I think I saw some random baseball news today as well that we can ask our baseball aficionado about when Mike joins us next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
First, I want to ask you, is there a moment of your career that you wish you could do over?
You know, Yasmin, no. And I know there are going to be people who are going to respond to that. Who say, well, what does he think? He's perfect. Absolutely. I'm the first to admit I'm far from perfect. But when you say do over, you know, I really can't see something that I would do completely over.
Well, there you go. Wow. The most arrogant guy in America, Chris.
Now, how can you say the lockdowns that you initiated, you didn't sign the order to make it happen, but you were the expert and people were following your advice, that we shut down all of these businesses and did all of and shut down schools and have these kids who are having psychological problems, committing suicide, they're 2 years behind in their learning, and you can sit there and say there's nothing that you wouldn't do differently?
And,
amazing.
And there's been no studies released that have corroborated anything that Fauci did. You know what I mean? There's been nothing that said, yep, good thing we did those lockdowns because X, Y, and Z. There's been nothing. And you know, Chris, I was of the misunderstanding on something, and I'm often wrong about things. I was of the misunderstanding that Fauci was like the head of an agency. I found out the other day he's like a sub director of a sub agency, and he's still the most highly paid bureaucrat in the freaking country.
Yeah, and
it's unbelievable.
And part of that is because he has been in government for 40 years. I mean, he was the person that was in charge of trying to get the AIDS epidemic under control. And that was in the early 80s, 82, 83. So,
and he botched that.
And he botched that. So this guy has been around 40 years. Tim, you're right. He's the highest paid person in the government. He makes more money than the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, let's bring in our next guest, and we'll talk to him about that and so much more.
Mike Ferguson.
I'm the world's heavyweight wrestling champion.
Gabe Pfeiffer.
I'm Batman.
Get up, can't you hear the alarm? Get up.
I want to be clear, I'm not going nuts.
No.
Mike Ferguson in the Morning on News Talk STL.
The host of the Mike Ferguson in the Morning Show. Mike, you like my new Barry White voice I'm trying out today? Or maybe it's Tony Fauci. We haven't decided.
It is. Yeah. I was going to say, way to start off the segment with me getting all fired up listening to Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, you're a big fan, right, Mike?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I got the shrine in my house. It is safely behind masks and plastic windows hanging down. I got them from the restaurant.
Mike, in the votive candle.
Exactly. St. Fauci. Mike, here's the question for you. You know, you've been very outspoken and upfront about your experiences with COVID, which were pretty horrific. But Mike, I bet you'd be the first guy to say, you know what? Thank goodness we did all of those lockdowns and those masks and the vaccines, because boy, just Mike, I haven't found anything. And you and I and Chris and everybody here at the station, we consume. Well, you know, we're not doctors, but we got some doctors on board here that we talk to a lot. I don't know of any studies that have backed up necessarily anything that Dr. Fauci has promoted. Have you found anything?
Not a single one. I would be curious to have somebody let us know what was he right about. I mean, I'm not asking that sarcastically. I mean, you know, he flip-flopped on a bunch of things, which, you know, you give him a little bit of room because you learn new stuff as things go along. But when it comes down to his, you know, dire predictions and, we have to mask up to stop the spread and you know, just 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And that's sincerely my question. What was he right about? And what happened is when he was wrong and he got challenged, he doubled down, and he's the one, like you said, Chris, he inspired and he, you know, recommended, and people just decided to follow what the federal agencies were saying, you know, Institute for Infectious Disease that he's in, and then the CDC, and, you know, he ushered in what I called this morning on the air the fear-mongering era of COVID. And it broke so many people emotionally, mentally. There were literally lives lost. I mean, all the damage that was done. And for him to sit there and say, no, there's nothing that I would redo. I mean, it's one thing to say, I've learned from everything in my life. You know, that's one thing. But if I go back and I see something where I've hurt so many people, I want to go back and do that over if I ever had that hypothetical chance. Just phenomenal arrogance by, I think, one of the worst people in our government.
I agree with you 100% on that, Mike. Mike, yesterday marked the end of the 2022 election season, except for Saturday. Louisiana has a runoff election with a few constitutional amendments. But last night was it. As you know, Republicans did not do as well as we expected this electoral cycle. Herschel Walker came up short again. Give us your Georgia election 22 autopsy.
Yeah, Herschel Walker was not a compelling candidate. I mean, you know, you look at how easily, and I would say easily, campaigns are hard work. We all know that in here. But, you know, Brian Kemp won Georgia running away, and, you know, Herschel Walker, you know, didn't. You know, there's, I know some people are saying, you know, the Republican Party should have done more. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. But, you know, you had two just absolutely awful candidates. And Herschel Walker, you know, he may be right on some stuff, but he just wasn't a compelling candidate. By a lot. And I do think that when you look across the country, the Democrats ended up the midterms with one more U.S. Senate seat and one more governorship than they had before the midterms, despite all the absolutely horrible economic damage that the Democrats have done. So I think you have to look at a bigger picture, guys, and maybe back out a little bit and say, how can people know exactly where this damage is coming from and still vote for the people that are doing it? We had much larger turnout in midterm elections, at least, from younger voters, and they are essentially, I think, committed to the hard left policies ideologically. So they're embracing what's against their best interest, and they're rejecting, you know, what's been good for the country. But the caveat there is, look at the areas where the conservatives hit them head on with a clear message, including culture war stuff, and fought the good fight and did it looking you right in the eye. And they did really well. I mean, you know, look at Rand Paul and Ron DeSantis and Mike Lee and people like that. So I think that we're seeing not just a bad political cycle for Republicans. I think we might be seeing one of those pivotal cultural changes in the country. And I don't think it's a good thing.
Mike, was one of the silver linings of the years of COVID tyranny the fact that parents had the opportunity to look right into their children's classrooms? Many for the first time, you know, maybe this is the first time it's happened in generations, and parents were shocked, rightly so, by what was going on. Mike, I think a lot of us on the inside, and I consider you as one of the insiders as well, you know, people that have followed education reform and the battles between the education establishment and the reformers for years, and I think so many like-minded people like us, though, who were not politically involved, thought that, oh yeah, maybe there's some bad stuff going on in public schools, but I'm just not going to worry about it. Mike, everybody better worry about it, because this is how the generation that's been educated over the last 15, 20 years, they're the ones who are now voting and making all these, I think, ill-informed decisions. What say you about that?
Yeah, we've been warning for how many years now that, you know, the establishment, whether it's K through 12 and then certainly the academy, the university and college system, that they are indoctrination centers. And for generations, the one place that everybody was safe and you knew that your kids were going to be loved was in the public schools. And I think what we have learned is that public schools are bad guys in a lot of cases. You know, and you look in overall, not just what they're teaching, but actively trying to hide them from parents and making it a point and a major aspect of public education to change the values of young people, and the social aspect is more important. I live in a school district here where part of their mission statement is about inclusion of the whole, you know, multiple, you know, gender nonsense and trans stuff and all of that sort of thing, and gender identity. I mean, that's written into their mission statement. And so I think a lot of parents realized, one, their kids weren't getting the education they thought, and two, the schools really felt that they were maybe co-parents, but essentially we're the boss. You report to us. We're the professionals. We're the teachers. You're just the parents. And then they got deep in there deep to what you're referring to all of this just awful curriculum that they're pushing into kids, whether it's, you know, the racial critical theories, whether it's, you know, the gender theories, whether it's just the overall misinformation regarding history and all of that sort of thing. And so, yeah, that would be the silver lining. It just came at a massive cost.
Mike, sad story this week out of Cardinal Nation. Longtime Cardinal broadcaster Dan McLaughlin was pulled over this week for a DWI. Those who follow the Cardinals know that he has had a history of drunk driving back in 2014. Around that era, I think he got a couple of DUIs then. The Cardinals gave him another chance, brought him back. This is his third time. Do you think this is it for him?
My gut tells me probably. I mean, I don't have any special, you know, information into the Cardinals, because the last ones, I don't know when the court cases ended. The actual incidents happened in 2010 and 2011. Mm-hmm. The court thing may have gone through until 2014, but it was 2010 and 2011. He's been with the Cardinals 22 years, and he's 48 years old now. So he was in his 20s. When he started with the Cardinals, you can only do that so many times. The fact that this one is now a felony makes it a lot different. And I think, you know, it's a really tough look for the Cardinals. And at some point, it's a liability. I don't know Danny Mac personally. I've never met him. You know, I've heard good things about him. But this is one of those areas where, I mean, drunk driving is a real sore spot for me. I don't know why. I've never had somebody, you know, who's been hurt or killed by a drunk driver. I've seen him on the roads like everybody else has, but there's just no excuse for it. The Cardinals are kind of holding their cards, you know, close to the chest with him, but I don't know how he comes back this year, at least at the start of the year, if he comes back at all. I don't know. I mean, that's for a team that is sponsored by Budweiser more than any other. That's a really tough look.
Sure is.
I mean, they play at Busch Stadium.
Excellent points. Hey, Mike, another quick baseball story. I saw in Business Insider today that there's a huge controversy about, and I didn't know this was a controversy at all. Maybe you did. That there's different baseballs that are used in the MLB, and there's this big controversy about how many different kinds of balls are used every year. What's going on in Major League, and why does that make a difference?
Okay, so it has to do with a couple things. One is how tightly they're wound. You know, the tighter that they are wound, you know, the farther, the harder they're going to jump off the bat. And so what happens is baseball has a commissioner who hates the game of baseball, in my opinion, Manfred. He wants to tinker with the game to micromanage the outcomes of it. And I just don't understand it. You know, he wants more run production. He wants more, you know, want to be more of an exciting game, even though it is an exciting game, you know, from a variety of different levels. And he's making all these terrible decisions on the rules. There are also in some areas where the balls are kept in like a, you know, climate controlled area before the games, and they're all trying to end up, you know, they're all trying to micromanage the variables in the game to affect the outcome of the game for what they think is going to be more marketable long term. And it's a lot of technical gobbledygook that's just nonsense, instead of just saying you've got some of the greatest athletes in the world and some of the highest skilled players in the world. Market that, for crying out loud. Stop messing with that, and, you know, get rid of some of these other rules that they put in there, and just let baseball be baseball. It's survived 150 years or so.
Quick question for everybody, because of course we're about running out of time. Time Magazine has announced their person of the year. It's kind of a no-brainer. If you guys don't know, who do you think?
I think I saw this.
Did you see it?
Mike, do you know?
See, he was one. What? Yeah. Am I there?
Yeah.
Okay. There. Yeah. See, I actually saw who they announced a little bit earlier.
Mr. Z.
It's kind of a no-brainer, wasn't it?
I think you could have said that with him or you could have said that with Elon Musk again, but it's with Zelensky. He brought the entire world into seeing Vladimir Putin for what he actually is, and I actually think it's kind of sad that we've got so many people who are turning their back. I mean, we've got a national interest in containing Russia. I mean, we do. We just, Russia cannot expand and reassemble and take over Europe. And, hopefully Zelensky and Ukraine, for whatever faults that they have, and they're not perfect, and I'm sure there's some money getting wasted, but they have literally stopped a country so far and held them at bay. I mean, they have held them for everything, but they have held off not being conquered by an unprovoked, brutal assault for 10 months now. Person of the year, as in having the most influence. I don't think you can argue with that.
We'll talk about it when we come back, but I don't think Stelle agrees with that choice. His face said it. Stelle's face said it all.
I'm with Stelle. I'm not a big fan either. I'm going to go with Musk.
There's a lot of conservatives who were stand with Ukraine, and then all of a sudden, overnight, they were audited. It's money laundering. It's all good, which is really weird to me. We're just paying for their proxy war, and my answer is that's better for paying than a direct war. I'd rather pay to have their guys get shot at and shoot back.
All right, Mike, we do got to leave it there. Otherwise, we're not going to have a Christmas corner today. We got to get out of this.
And you did a little bit of Christmas corner, so thank you.
Mike, have a great show in the morning. We'll be listening at 5:30 out of the gates.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Mike Ferguson in the morning. All right, let's get to a breakdown.
Stell's going
to
do the Christmas corner and talk about why he thinks Zelensky is a terrible time of the year. Stell, it's all you when we come back.
We should give Stell his own segment.
Exactly.
We really should.
I think Stell could do his own segment.
I think it'd be fun.
Stell, you want to do Christmas corner?
We have to do that when we'll have to plug him into the rotation.
I may talk baseball instead of Zelensky.
We're always safe with baseball. More on Zelensky, Musk, Stell, and Chris Arps when we come back here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Would you like to see him visit the border?
I don't care if he visits the border or not. He doesn't need to visit the border to know we've got a problem. He's got people that report to him every day about what the problem is. And sometimes we fixate on these little issues. Do you think the president doesn't know we got a problem at the border and what the issues are? I know he does.
But not necessary to see it firsthand. That's a little issue?
I think he knows it's got to be addressed. He's gotten the reports. He's seen the photos. At some point he may or may not go, but I think he knows what's got to get fixed. And you've seen him begin that process.
Chris, I guess the follow-up question could have been, and what is he doing? Tell me, what is he doing?
I can tell you absolutely nothing. And the reason why I had Stell play that border cut, because we did play it earlier, is because borders are very important, and borders have been the causes of many wars throughout human history. And we'll touch a little bit more on that on Chris's Corner.
Chris.
The whole thing is a joke.
Good God, we gotta do something here, people.
It's not personal, it's strictly business.
My favorite black leader of all time is Frederick Douglass, who asked after emancipation, we just freed the blacks, now what are we gonna do with them? His answer was, leave us alone.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, as I mentioned in the earlier part of the show, my wife and I have a hobby that we like to visit presidential museums. There are 13 official presidential museums, and my wife and I have had the honor of visiting eight and a half of those museums. I say half because Gerald R. Ford's museum is separated between University of Michigan and his hometown in Grand Rapids. But, with December 7th, 1941, of course, was the surprise attack of the Japanese against the United States. It was probably our official entry into the war. Going to these different presidential libraries, you get a very different perspective on the war. And my wife and I were very fortunate to get a perspective from the Roosevelt perspective. Eisenhower, who prosecuted the war in Europe and brought us our victory, and Harry Truman, who made the fateful decision to drop not only one, but two atomic weapons that many people believe, and it's true, helped shorten the war. You know, a lot of times these conflicts are started over borders, land, and natural resources. Yes, Hitler was a maniac who wanted to exterminate an entire population, and the Japanese were militaristic who took over Korea and enslaved parts of China. But those wars were also about resources. And in going to these museums is very interesting. What we learned is part of these wars that Germany and Japan, they were looking for land. That they were not sufficient when it came to feeding their people. They didn't have enough land. And so they were colonizing, Japan was, other Korea and other places, so they could have land for farming. And the same with Germany. And also when it comes to natural resources, such as oil. You know, it was amazing to me. I always wondered why we had a world war, why we were fighting in North Africa and other parts of Africa. And it was because of the oil in Libya, how important that was. And, you know, there's an old saying in the Bible that says that what is old comes again. There's nothing new under the sun. And I see so many parallels between Russia, Putin invading Ukraine, and especially what you see with Hitler when he invaded different countries. One of the stark things, I remember about 7 or 8 years ago, I think, when Putin invaded, I think it was Crimea, and they had a sham election in Crimea. And of course, the ethnic Russians in Crimea voted saying that they wanted to join Russia, and that was their reason for joining Russia. There was an interesting parallel in World War II that Hitler did the same thing. That Hitler and annex, I forgot which country it was, but he said the ethnic Germans there want to be a part of Germany, and that's what he used to justify his actions. Look, I don't want the United States being involved in foreign wars. I don't want our money going over to foreign wars. We should use that money here for the problems that we have here. But as I said, history seems to repeat itself, and Vladimir Putin has said that one of the greatest tragedies of the 20th century was the demise of the Russian Empire. And I think it's no secret that if he had the opportunity, he would take over Crimea, Poland, all of those countries that, as NATO members, are supposed to be protected. And I also see it also with China. You know, China has their eyes on Taiwan, has their eyes on Hong Kong. I think they were looking to see how the world would respond to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I think that has kept them at bay, to a sense. As I said, I'm not a warmonger. I don't want our resources and our time and our money going over there. But I don't want to repeat World War II, where we were trying to be isolationists and let Europe fight their war. And we eventually had to go over there and fight. I've said many times before, God, I'm out of breath almost. There is no other country in this world that I want to see in leadership. Unfortunately, it has fallen on our shoulders. I don't want Russia leading the world. I don't want China leading the world. I don't want North Korea or Iran or any other country leading the world. Unfortunately, we have the moral backbone and the moral fiber because we are the greatest country in the world, democracy, that we do have to stand up and help people trying to fight for their liberty and security overseas. And that is Chris's Corner. Barely with breath, but
you got through it. You ran the marathon.
I did.
You ran the marathon. And
I got to start running if I'm going to do these Chris's Corners.
And you finished. Yes, exactly.
You know what I thought your buried lead was?
What's that?
And I'm going back over history. You made the comment about land for farming.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see China buying
good point.
Land here.
Good point.
And golly, I'm trying not to connect dots. Mm-hmm. But now that you brought it up, I'm sort of looking at dots and trying to connect them. And Austria, I think it might have been Austria back in the 30s that Germany annexed.
Because you look at it, they've got 2 billion people. And they need
food
to feed those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they can use our farmland for food, but also they can hold us hostage by owning our farmland. It's just dangerous that we've been allowing them to do that.
Yeah, and I would say, I would agree, actually, with Kevin McCarthy on his latest stance on Ukraine, which is, look, we'll continue to provide aid, but the days of blank checks are over. I think that's a very important thing to say.
Yes.
And I think And I think there's been so much of a focus on Ukraine and not enough focus on China. You know what I mean? And I think that's because of Biden is a a compromised president when it comes to China. And Russia, the nice thing that we've learned about Russia throughout this horrible war that's been engaged in is that Russia is not able to undertake a major military operation. So when are we turning our focus to China, I guess is my question. Because Biden seems to be completely and utterly ignoring the real tiger in Asia.
Do you think maybe, and I think I agree with you that he's doing that, but we should try to wrap up this Ukraine thing and make them have a more sustained victory before we focus?
It would be nice, but I'm also worried about we're going to be in another 20-year war like in Afghanistan.
I agree. I don't want that.
Without an end. So what's the solution? Not even smart people like Jim Talent necessarily can foresee the future on that. All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk about the final and utter failure of the collusion delusion. Thank you to Elon Musk. When we come back at Newstalk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.